Translation. Riding in a palanquin covered with cloth and accompanied by maidservants, Sita Takarani came to the house of Jagannath Mishra, bringing with her many auspicious articles, such as fresh grass, paddy, gorochana, turmeric, kumkum, and sandalwood. All these presentations filled a large basket. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The words Vashtragupta Dola are very significant in this verse. Even 50 or 60 years ago in Calcutta, I would have been like 1910, he wrote this in the 70s, all respectable ladies would go to a neighboring place riding on a palanquin carried by four men. The palanquin was covered with soft cotton, and in that way, there was no chance of seeing a respectable lady traveling in public. Ladies, especially those coming from respectable families, could not be seen by ordinary men. This system is still current in remote places. The Sanskrit word Asurya Pashya indicates that a respectable lady could not be seen even by the sun. In the Oriental culture, this system was very prevalent and strictly observed by respectable ladies, both Hindu and Muslim. We have actual experience in our childhood that our mother would not walk even next door to observe an invitation. Rather, she would go in either a carriage or a palanquin carried by four men. This custom was also strictly followed 500 years ago, and the wife of Advaita Acharya, being a very respectable lady, observed the customary rules current in that social environment. Amagyana timirantasya kananjana shalakaya chakshuran militam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha. So here we have a description of at the time of the birth, of Lord Chaitanya's birth, and respectable persons came to offer him their respects. And this is Sita Takarani, wife of Advaita, who's bringing with her various items all listed here, durava, danya, rice paddy, gorochana, etc., auspicious items, to bless the child. So, of note here, and I wanted to speak about this particular point, is she was carried in a palanquin by four gentlemen. So, sounds good, yeah? For the ladies. And Prabhupada's saying that this was according to the customary rules current in that social environment. So, in other words, I understand his saying, okay, customary at that time. So times have changed, you may have noticed. And this is not really how things are done now. But when we see this kind of instruction or this kind of description, we should try to understand the principle it enshrines. The external form may change, and we're not going to see, especially in the West, ladies carried in palanquins. But we can ask ourselves, well, what was this all about? And so Prabhupada is telling us, Asurya Pasha, so that the lady would not be seen by anyone, even the sun, the respectable ladies. Surya is the sun, so not by the sun, Pasha, seen, even. So that means they would not be out in public places to be seen by ordinary men on the street. Draupadi said the same thing when she was insulted and assaulted and dragged into the assembly. That she, I've not even been seen by the, I who have never been seen even by the sun, and now stripped in front of these low grade, you know, awful men. Because that was the system, that respectable ladies would, out of modesty and shyness, not show themselves in public. So this is enshrining the principle of chastity and indeed protection. And actually, high-class men would not even want to see ladies. I was reminded of the story of Lakshman when Sita was kidnapped, and they were trying to find her, Ram and Lakshman, and they encountered the monkeys, the vanaras, and the vanaras said, "Well, we found these jewels, which were dropped from the sky." So as Sita was being carried away by Ravan through the skies, she took off her jewels and threw them down. And they showed them, opened the cloth, and there was brilliant, shining jewels. And they said, do you recognize these? And Lakshman said, "I only recognize her foot bangles, because I never looked above her ankles." So this was the system, that, you know, the high-class men would not be lewd and lusty. Of course, nowadays, the social environment has somewhat changed, just a little bit. Women openly flaunt themselves in public, as we know. And men are like beasts, and really, what can we say? They're becoming increasingly degraded. And yet, somehow, we think this is civilization. Liberté, égalité, fraternité. We have reached a high point of civilized life. But actually, this is not the Vedic culture. Actually, once I heard an anecdote how someone said to Gandhi, "What do you think of Western civilization?" And he said, "I think it would be a good idea." So, probably... We could probably say the same for India these days, which is unfortunately sliding down, thanks probably to our association. So this is the civilization which, you know, people think to be free is the high ideal, to do what you like, you know, and not be restrained. And it all comes from a completely mistaken paradigm. Yes, to be free, Prabhupada said, free, freely going to hell, boldly going to hell, you know. We're doing what we like, we're bold, we're free, you know, and where are you going? Because it's enshrining it's completely based on this principle that, on the mistaken idea that we only have one life, so we have to make the most of it, and do what we, and enjoy as much as we can, and not be restricted and restrained by all these crazy ideas of morality and religion. So, anyway, I'm not going to get into that particularly, but I'd like to talk a little more about this idea of in this verse, really, the important point, which I see as being chastity and protection of women. So, I wanted to examine, in particular, I think a seminal purport on this from the Bhagavad Gita, which is worth examining quite closely and understanding, and that is 140. Because this was a point raised by Arjuna at the beginning of the Gita. So Arjuna, of course, he raises various points which Krishna dismisses, you know, kutashtam kashmalamidam vishame samupashtitam. Where did this impurity come from? But Krishna's not dismissing Arjuna's points as being of no value. He's simply saying these are misapplied in this context at this time. You know, Arjuna was bringing up some very good points about morality, about religion. He was a highly cultured person, very intelligent person. And his points, even those points apparently dismissed by Krishna, are worth examining closely. And one thing he said in the beginning was about the chastity of women. And he envisioned that, you know, if we have this battle, what will be the outcome? Everyone will be killed. All the elders of the family, he was thinking Bhishma, Drona, and so many Balika, all the great elders, wise elders, were lined up, ready to fight. Kshatriyas, you know, even though they were old, they would still come out and do their duty and fight. So they were going to die. And he envisioned that when they die, then who will maintain religious principles in society? Because that was the role of the elders. The elders weren't supposed to be old fools going on cruises and playing golf and, you know, wasting their final days of life. But they should by then have been learned. They're learned and wise and experienced and aware of the religious principles and morality, and they would pass that on to the next generation, teach them. So Arjun could see, well, what will happen? They'll all be dead, and then there'll be no one to impart these values and teachings to the next generations. So chaos will ensue. And in particular, he said this, Adharma bibhivat Krishna padushyanti kulastriya strishu dushtasu vashneya jayate vana sankara. It's a very famous verse, a wonderful verse. When irreligion is prominent in the family, O Krishna, the women of the family become polluted, and from the degradation of womanhood, O descendant of Vrishni, comes unwanted progeny. So, adharma, this is the beginning of the problem. Irreligion. And irreligion, so no training, no understanding of religious principles. And of course we're seeing that now. There is no such training, that our society is now secular, and they don't have any concept of the need for abiding by the moral principles given by God. It's now moral relativity, and that means no morals, essentially. But here we have the eternal principles, Sanatana Dharma, given by the Gita, given by Arjuna here. So, what happens? Good population in the purple, in human society, is the basic principle for peace, prosperity, and spiritual progress in life. So, good population. This is also described in the Gita. Dvalbhuta saragalokeshmin daivim asuram eva. There are two kinds of people in society, the good and the bad, the daiva and the asura. So good population means the daiva. And in the 16th chapter, we see the list of daivic qualities given by Krishna. These are inherited, actually. They are, if human society is structured in the right way, then good population, good progeny. We're talking here about progeny. That means we give birth. We'll see in a moment Prabhupada explaining that. To good population. He goes on to say, the Varnashram religion's principles were so designed that good population would prevail in society for the general spiritual progress of state and community. So Varnashram, and that would include Garbhadan Samskar. Garbhadan Samskar is the ritual undergone prior to conception. And it ensures good population. And this is actually, we find Prabhupada frequently referring to this in his books. It is an intrinsic part of the Varnashram system. Because we'll find different things stated by Srila Prabhupada in respect of Varnashram. Sometimes he'll say, well, it's gone, finished, and no longer possible to resurrect. And that's true. Not in its full-fledged form, with so many principles and little rules involved and so much. And the kind of people who practiced Varnashram were actually very high class, the Aryans. You know, sometimes I think we have a misconception here on this one that, oh, Varnashram is meant for, you know, the mass of people, and we're the Vaishnavas, and we're transcendental, and we don't need that. But if you look carefully at this, you'll see that that's not true. That if you look at, for instance, the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, where a list of 30 qualities are given of the human being, and they correspond quite closely to some of these in the Gita, in the 16th chapter. And they're all very high qualities of, you know, cultured people. And then Prabhupada writes there, I think it's in 7.1.13, I think in 7. I forget exactly the verse number. But amongst such persons, Varnashram should be introduced. So amongst purified people, elevated people, Varnashram is practiced. So he does say that, you know, this is no longer possible to resurrect because it's Kali Yuga, Kalo Shudra, Sambhava, everything like that. And, you know, we don't have the Samskara, Bhaved Dvija. Without that, we remain low class people. But some things are possible. So in other places, Prabhupada says that without Varnashram, there cannot be sanity in human society. So we have to balance these different things. We need to discuss them and try to understand what does he mean. You know, on the one hand, he says it's not possible. On the other hand, he says we must do it. So some things we must do. Some things he introduced. We have our ashrams. We have brahmachari and grihastha, and so on. And so, Varnashram, you can't take one little bit of it and practice it in isolation. It's a complete whole, a system. So, if you have brahmachari, that means brahmachari needs to be maintained. You need householders. Householders are not supposed to remain householders all their life. They become vanaprasthas. Some of them will take sannyas. Householders have to maintain themselves. That means you need the varnas. Indeed, without the varnas, you can't understand the ashrams, because ashram depends on varna. So the whole thing is required. You have to, you know, at least put the structure, the basics in place. And as much as we can do, we should try to do. And that's what I understand Prabhupada means. We should do it to the best of our ability. So one of those things which we perhaps can try to do is this, is the samskar. And what is that, Garbhadan? Okay, Prabhupada, we all know perhaps that, you know, 50 rounds, Prabhupada said that, you know, because we don't know the rituals. Maybe they'll be brought back. I don't know. But I think the essence of it is that we're trying to produce, Krishna conscious children, at least daivic, good population, who have good qualities, even from birth. And so it's the mentality, it's the consciousness that we're, you know, that the husband and wife are coming together for that purpose, to produce good children. So this is the essence of Garbhadan. Okay, there's a ritual, an external ritual. And for us, yes, maybe let's, you know, chant good rounds. I mean, we should always be in good consciousness, but yeah, extra rounds would be a nice idea to, you know, purify the mind. But it's this, that the husband and wife are together in sacred union, with the intention of producing sacred offspring, pure offspring. So that's not going to be possible when there's irreligion and prostitution and, you know, unchastity in society. When there's free mixing of men and women, where is that consciousness? You know, have sex for enjoyment, for pleasure, and, you know, adultery, who cares? And these days it's really the prevalent mood, more and more so. And I hear things, hellish things, about how life goes on these days. I'm shocked. But this is not helpful. Let's read a bit more. He's saying that such population depends on the chastity and faithfulness of its womanhood. So, good population, which means peaceful life, not, you know, you're not swarming with thugs who are going to mug you at the first opportunity or smash into your car or, you know, burgle your house or whatever, you know, which is what we face now, you know, or just all kinds of crazy stuff going on. In America now, like the mass shootings frequently going on there, that kind of thing. And the social problems which are mounting more and more. Domestic abuse is a massive problem now. Women are being abused terribly. Children are being abused terribly. There's, you know, it's going out of control. And all this is due to bad population. Because from the outset, no thought is being given. No understanding is there of this necessity of having of maintaining chastity, of maintaining of protecting women in the first place, so that this can take place, this garbadan and good population can produced. Such population depends on the chastity. And Prabhupada goes on to say, as children are very prone to be misled, women are similarly very prone to degradation. Okay, so we've got to factor this in. Balaka, women are by nature simple, innocent, Prabhupada says in various places, and by God's arrangement, they have this nature so that they can be submissive and chaste and follow their husbands. They're good religious husbands. So that nature can be abused. They can be misled. And this is where the problem begins, that men are lusty. And, you know, given the opportunity, they will mislead women. That in the Mahabharata, that was there in one section where when Bhima, when the Pandavas were in Ekachakra, and they stayed in the house of a Brahmin, and that was they in that village in that at that time this Rakshasa Bucker, wasn't it, that one, yeah, was like in charge, you know, and they had to give him like this sacrifice of a human being every so often. So it came to the turn of that man whilst they were in the house and of that Brahmin. So Kunti was overhearing them speak, and the lady was saying that, if you go, let me go, because if you go, I'll be unprotected, I'll be like a piece of meat on the street, you know, that I'll just be like, you know, completely at the mercy of men who are lusty and who are just going to take advantage of me, even then, 5,000 years ago, or to speak of now. So, therefore, both children and women require protection by the elder members of the family. So this is interesting. He's saying that they need protection by the elder members. So the elder members are not going to protect them by, you know, physical power and strength. But so how do they protect? They protect by imparting religious principles, by training them in Krishna consciousness, in understanding the values of moral behavior, of chastity. This is the protection. Prabhupada actually writes in the Bhagavatam, this is 6:18:46, when someone instructs a woman, especially her husband, she innocently follows. Thus she can be trained for a better purpose. By nature, woman wants to follow a man. If the man is good, the woman can be trained for a good purpose. So, this is, as I was saying, this is the nature, the female nature. But they have to be properly trained, properly guided, properly instructed. It's essential that men take up this role properly and, you know, not neglect that. And a proverb saying by the elders, okay, that's good. If there is such an opportunity, and hopefully we'll see as time progresses that our society will develop in that way and that the elders will begin to assume that role. And maybe that exists already in some instances, but certainly also, when someone instructs her, Prabhupada says, especially her husband. So, this is the role of husbands, to instruct the wife, which, means to help her. That's real protection. Protection, okay, yes, give food, give clothing, give shelter, you know, and, jewels and an iPhone and a house and all these essential items. Yes, okay. But on top of that, more than that, is instruction, good instruction. By being engaged in various religious practices, women will not be misled into adultery. Prabhupada writes in this purport here. So engagement in religious practices, so training and engagement. So what is that training and engagement? Some guidance is given right here in the Gita, and you can find that in the 13th chapter, where Prabhupada says, and this is 13:8-12, and Prabhupada says, as for detachment from children, wife, and home, it is not meant that one should have no feeling for these. They are natural objects of affection. So, in Krishna consciousness, sometimes we think, oh, this is Maya, you know, attached to my wife and children, and it's not good, you know, go to the forest, or go to Vrindavan and, you know, practice serious spiritual life here. And I think that mood is probably less prevalent than perhaps it once was, but, it still might be there and it might cross the mind, you know, especially household life is not a piece of cake. It's difficult. And when children come, it's intense, and it's a struggle. And a man might think, why am I doing this struggle? You know, this is taking me away from my Krishna consciousness, you know, and may think of alternatives, but this is not the instruction given here. They're natural objects of affection. So of course, that's to be expected. You know, that's not something unnatural. So he says, but when they're not favorable to spiritual progress, then one should not be attached to them. Okay, so Jai Shishi Radha Gokulananda Ram Lakshman Hanuman. So let's try to understand that. When they are not favorable to spiritual progress, one should not be attached. So what would that mean? Does it mean that, it might mean that they're wholly opposed to you practicing spiritual life, in which case you've got a problem. Even still, there are instances where Srila Prabhupada did not recommend separation, even when there was that kind of a situation. But I don't think that's what he really means. Okay, that's something to be considered. You know, I've encountered that kind of thing where the man, like the wife, was like, you know, tore up his Bhagavad Gita. Okay, slightly problematic. We have to do something about that maybe. But even Prabhupada, you know, his wife traded in his Bhagavatam for tea bags. And he still didn't like abandon her, you know. So that's something else to be considered. But what I think he's saying is, favorable to spiritual progress means to be engaged in spiritual life together. If you're not doing that, then they're not favorable. If you're just viewing your wife and your children as objects of sense gratification, then that's not favorable, either for them or for you. So, you know, try to make it favorable. So Prabhupada, how can you do that? The best process for making the home pleasant is Krishna consciousness. If one is in full Krishna consciousness, he can make his home very happy because this process of Krishna consciousness is very easy. One need only chant the Maha Mantra, accept the remnants of food offered to Krishna, have some discussion on books like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and engage oneself in deity worship. These four things will make one happy. One should train the members of his family in this way. They can sit down morning and evening and chant together, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If one can mold his family life in this way to develop Krishna consciousness, following these four principles, calls them principles, that chanting together, discussing the books, taking prasadam, no problem with that one, and doing a little deity worship, then he says, there is no need to change from family life to renounced life. So, okay, that's another interesting point. What does he mean? I think he certainly means that you don't have to have this mentality that this is a real impediment and I need to get out of here and, you know, go off somewhere. You know, actually, renunciation in passion, this is renunciation in, when things are troublesome, you give them up, leads to grief. So it's not good. I don't think it necessarily means that when the appropriate time comes that one should not renounce. That's another question. If you're so qualified, you're a Brahmin and everything, then yeah. But it's not that whilst in the thick of it, you know, you should go. You should actually turn it into a Krishna conscious environment, an atmosphere. So I think the point, I'm coming back to the point, is that, you know, how this training should take place, how this, how the man should instruct and guide and engage in these religious activities that Prabhupada mentions here in this purport, 140. So then they will not be misled into adultery. So they'll be happy. Prabhupada says, if you do these things, you'll be happy. Why do people engage in adultery? Because they're not happy. Because they think more sex will make me happy. But this is a gross misconception. It's simply going to make you more miserable. It's going to make everyone miserable. It's disastrous. Disastrous for the person, for the people involved, for the children involved, for society. It's a calamity to be rigorously avoided. So, you know, we have to follow these, think carefully about these instructions and follow them. So this won't take place. Misled. So don't blame the woman. They're being misled, you know, by who? You know, by men who are not controlled, who have no sense of morality. So don't let that happen. According to Chanakya Pandit, women are generally not very intelligent and therefore not trustworthy. Okay, this is a big one. What does it mean? Okay, not very intelligent. Here's my take on that. is not that, you know, they can't pass examinations and, you know, because you'll find that the A-level rates are much higher for the girls than they are for the boys. And universities, they do fine in degrees and everything. They can be leaders of the country, as we now see. You know, we have a prime minister, they can almost be the president of the United States. So, yeah, these possibilities are there, but that's not, you know, what is intelligence? What does it mean in this context? I think it simply means that they're very simple and their discriminatory power is not necessary. They're swayed by sentiment. Elsewhere, Prabhupada says that. So, you know, a man will come along, I will love you forever. Ah, oh, this, you're the one for me. You know, just like, oh, where have you been all my life? You know, and so much nonsense he'll speak, you know, which, you know, the woman will go, ooh, you know, and can be misled by that kind of flattering and fool and, you know, lusty kind of speech, you know, which the man will present, for his own purposes. So that, you know, is, I think the you know, what's really meant here, not trustworthy means that that will happen. So don't think, oh, if I just leave the woman to her own devices, and I, you know, I just carry on with my spiritual life and everything will be fine and, you know, she'll get automatic benefit and all this and that. Not trustworthy means that, you know, that there is this danger that they will be misled if they're not properly trained and protected, protected by good instructions. Even Sita, Mother Sita said that the woman's real protection comes from within herself, actually. But for that, there has to be like the proper imparting of knowledge, of training, of the sense of morality, and also the satisfaction and happiness that comes from practicing Krishna consciousness. Because if someone's satisfied and peaceful in their life, they're not going to look outside and elsewhere for something else to make them so-called happy. Because that's the problem. That's where it's coming from. People think that, you know, sense gratification and more of it will make me happy. So they don't care about morality. So the I think this less intelligent just means a little gullible, a little naive, but innocent, I think is the best word. So they must be properly trained and protected. And actually, there's no problem with that. You know, I don't think anyone, you know, if you're in that position, if you're a woman, if you're a Shudra, and you're, you know, in a lower status, so-called status of human society, you're not in a lower spiritual status. This is the important point to be considered, that we're all equal on the spiritual platform. We have different external natures. We have to act according to our nature. But that doesn't mean that we're in any way restricted from attaining life's ultimate goal. Striyo Vaisha, Tata Shudra, Tepi Yanti, Param Gatim. The ultimate goal of life, to go back to Godhead, can be achieved from any position of life. It doesn't matter. You know, so it's not. I think the movement now is that, you know, women are like, why should we be second-class citizens? Why should we not have all the same rights as a man? And that's coming from this paradigm that happiness comes from the external arrangement, and it comes from, you know, material status, material acquisition, material position and power and wealth and that kind of thing. Because that is the training now in society. That is the way people view things. That's the paradigm. So naturally, women think like that. And they're not being protected. They're not being trained. No one's being trained. The men are not being trained. So, you know, this insanity is prevalent throughout the whole of society. But it's not the path to happiness. The path to happiness is Krishna consciousness. And that, we have to retain that sense and know that, okay, externally, my position is to serve others. My position is, you know, I'm a Shudra, I have to serve. Or I'm a woman, I serve my husband. Like that. But that's not detracting from your real self, from your real happiness, which is to be the eternal servant of the Lord. We have to work with our nature to achieve perfection. Actually, in the Gita, Krishna says that, sve sve karma birata samsiddhi samsiddhim labhate nara, that if we work according to our nature, we can achieve perfection. It's not a problem. If we forget, so, you know, we need to constantly hear. The problem is we forget the fundamental principles, the fundamental teachings. I'm not this body. Material happiness cannot be changed. I have already determined in this life is already how much happiness, how much distress, materially speaking, that can't be changed. That tasyaiva heto prayateta kovidana labhyate yat brahmatam upariyada talabhyate dukavat anyata sukham dukha sukha. So these things are already determined at the time of birth. So don't waste your time trying to change them. Your material circumstances. Oh, I work very hard, get a good job, get more money, get a bigger house, I'll be more happy. That's not going to happen. You're not going to be more. You may get the bigger house. Yeah, sure. You may get the nice BMW car, whatever it is you're aspiring to have. But is it going to make you more happy? No. Not more than was destined. Therefore, stick to your duty, do your duty in Krishna consciousness, and be peaceful, be happy. But for that, you have to hear. You have to keep hearing so you don't forget these fundamental points, the basic points of our philosophy, which underpin our behavior. You know, if we stop hearing, they just disappear in a haze and we just get caught up in the maelstrom of daily life, of striving, like everyone is striving. You know, we go to work and we're surrounded by people with materialistic ideals, principles and paradigms, and we just get caught up in that. And we think, yeah, me too, you know, I've got to do this, I've got to get more, I've got to have more, you know. But having more doesn't make you more, it doesn't, you know, make you more happy. It simply makes you more anxious and struggling more and more. So keep hearing and not forgetting these fundamental principles. And teach them to our dependents. As men, we're leaders in society. We're not necessarily leaders of large numbers of people, but we're certainly leaders in our own families. And that's a huge responsibility. So, should not, guru na sashyat, pita na sashyat. You know, don't become a worshipable person. Don't become a leader if you're not capable of delivering. Okay, you may say, well, how can I deliver anyone? I'm not even delivered myself. But I think the way to understand that is that should be the endeavor. That should be the thrust and the, you know, what you're trying to achieve is to deliver your dependents. Otherwise, everyone goes to hell. And actually, we see that being described here by Arjuna. That, so the different family traditions of religious activities should always engage them, the ladies and children, and thus their chastity and devotion will give birth to a good population eligible for participating in the Varnashram system. On the failure of such Varnashram, naturally the women become free to act and mix with men, and thus adultery is indulged in at the risk of unwanted population. So Shankara Narakayeva, this is hellish. It leads to hell. Unwanted. So what does unwanted mean? It may be that, you know, the mother, a little boy, really pleased and happy to have that child. So what do you mean, unwanted? You know, I wanted him. Sometimes they don't want them, of course, and they kill them before they're even born, and that's awful. But I think what's meant here, who is it unwanted by? It's unwanted in society. It's unwanted. We don't want persons whose inclination is towards sin, is towards hellish behavior in society, is towards drinking and illicit sex and, you know, and whatever. So that's unwanted population. And when you have a prevalence of such persons, then society descends into Narakayeva. It becomes like living in hell. So this is to be avoided, actually. So therefore protection of the women is required. And actually, if that's not done, I remembered as I was preparing this class, one instruction by Bhishma Dev, instructing Yudhisthira, it's in the Shanti Parva. And Prabhupada writes that, you know, one should protect women, children, innocent people. He says, and harming them is totally forbidden, because even by insulting a woman, one loses his duration of life. Even by insulting them, by insulting weak persons. And this was in connection with Draupadi. This is in the 8th chapter of the first canto. Where it said that due to the rough handling of Draupadi's hair, they all lost their lives, Dushasan, Duryodhan, etc. And Prabhupada says this is because they insulted a chaste woman. And the result was, you know, even insulting them, never mind physically harming them, never mind actually, you know, doing them some injustice, abusing them, just insulting them. And Bhishma, when he was instructing Yudhisthira, said that three things are unbearable: the eyes of the snake, the eyes of the rishi, and the eyes of the weak. And if a weak person is afflicted and cries out and fails to find a protector, then the king with all his ministers sinks into hell. So, you know, it's so disastrous that if you don't protect the weak, it's the divine, the divine rod of punishment destroys you. It's a danda. This is the instructions of Bhishma. Danda niti, it's called sometimes. Instructions of the rod. The punishment that, you know, and if you fail to give the protection, then this will be the result. Destruction will ensue. Not just, you know, that everything is destroyed. So, the eyes of the weak. So it's like, you know, you can't look, if you try to look the eyes of a snake, you know, can't, you know, terrifying. You're going to run a mile. Or the rishi, you know, is looking at you, the sadhu, you know, sees right to your soul. Prabhupada, people talk often about how when Prabhupada looked at them, it was like they were looking, he was looking right into their hearts. They were like, he couldn't hold his gaze, you know. And the weak, because the eyes of the afflicted, you know, so don't fail to give that protection. Certainly don't abuse, you know, such persons who depend on you. How horrible is that? You know. And the benefits of it are also immense if we do that. And, before I stop, I'm just going to tell this one little story, which is found in the CC, actually. The wife of a Brahmin suffering from leprosy manifested herself as the topmost of all chaste women by serving a prostitute to satisfy her husband. She thus stopped the movement of the sun, brought her dead husband back to life, and satisfied the three principal demigods, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshvara. So this is a story of, I think, Narayani, and who had a husband who was ill with leprosy, but he was lusty, and he wanted to enjoy with a prostitute. So the woman was so chaste and devoted to her husband that she facilitated that. She went to the prostitute's house and, you know, served her so that she would become obliged, and then she said, please, you know, serve my husband, bring my husband in. So, you know, she took him there, but when he got there and he found out what had happened, he said, oh, I can't, you know, he was so struck by his wife's chastity, so that he said, okay, I've changed my mind, you know, and she took him, as she was taking him back, he accidentally, he touched a rishi, who then cursed him that by sunrise you will die because he touched a leprotic person touching the rishi. So then the woman said, the sun shall not rise, because she didn't want her husband to die. So afraid of the power of this woman was so chaste and powerful, the sun hid behind the eastern hills. He wouldn't come up because he was afraid of her power. So then Yamaraj had to, you know, come and sort the situation out. This is a problem. So then, you know, she said, allow the sun to, he asked her, please, you know, take that back, let the sun rise, otherwise the universe will be thrown into chaos. So she said, well, bring my husband back to life. So he brought her husband back to life, to prevent him from dying, you know. So this little story is given there in the Antya Lila, that women become themselves very potent and powerful when they're chaste. There's another little story about Nala and Damayanti, which is found in the Mahabharata. Damayanti was the chaste wife of King Nala, and so things happened, and he lost everything, and he had to go to the forest with his wife, and then they ended up being separated, and she was alone in the forest. And she was very beautiful, and a hunter saw her, and he like lost his control of his brains, and you know he wanted to like assault her, but you know Damayanti was so chaste to her husband that she just said, if I've ever thought of another man other than my husband, May he be burned to ashes. And instantly the man was reduced to, just at that point, he was just reduced to ashes just by this chaste lady's power of looking at him, you know. So these are things that, you know, are there in the Shastras to encourage chastity. But most of all, is that it leads to happiness for everyone. If the man does his duty, protects the woman, if the woman remains chaste to her husband, if Krishna consciousness is at the center of family life, then everything will be peaceful, everything will be happy. And Prabhupada writes here in the beginning, good population will prevail for the general spiritual progress. So vanashram in and of itself is not a spiritual thing that, you know, but it's the externals that are required that will elevate, so that you can practice spiritual life in a peaceful situation in order to achieve the ultimate goal of life. So this is what we should be trying to do.